Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast about the world's greatest, strangest superhero team, the Doom Patrol.
Hey, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks, and you can send us emails to waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We're on Facebook. That's unusual. And you can also, we have a website, sort of. It's run by Doug. It's called mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, and he puts up posts about the shows that we do a few days after we do them, which is wonderful. And all our episodes, many of them, are available on iTunes, and others are available on Stitcher Radio, and everything's available on podbean.com. So fill your boots.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDpod. And as always, we are proudly brought to you by comicosity.com.
Yeah, and this week I was looking at an interview with Gail Simone, and she's working with Kat Staggs on a new Image book called Crosswind, which seems to be a thriller with body swapping in it, and it's got gorgeous art, and it's got a dude freaking out because he's got boobs and things like that. So if you're... Sounds like your sort of thing. Check it out. I'm going to check it out when it comes out.
Cool.
I reckon.
Hmm. Yeah, a bit of Gail Simone.
Yeah.
But Paul, how's your week been?
Yeah, but it's winter. It's cold here, so suddenly all the heaters are on and my eyeballs are really dried out. I've got the dry balls, as I like to call them. It's feeling uncomfortable. But other than that, seeing lots of movies. So,
right.
Yeah. Me and the missus, we've been my daughter's working in Goulburn, which is a 45-minute drive from our house. She does a 4-hour shift on the weekends both days. So I have the option of going in and out, you know, 4 times and spending 3 hours in the car or just staying in Goulburn and doing something.
Right.
So me and Sam, we've been going to the movies. So we caught up with Table 19 the week before last. And this week we saw Fate of the Furious, which was a completely stupid guilty pleasure. And every time it got dumb, it just got a bit dumber and made it, you know, a symphony. I was delighted with how stupid it was. So quite enjoying that. Like, the action scenes, they're nuts. And they know they're nuts. And it's, you know, those things are unrealistic. And, you know, you can look and go, that's unrealistic. And, you know, what's the point of saying that? It's fun.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. What about you, Mike?
Kind of the same to you. Not a lot in terms of reading comics. I've read 2 comics in the past week. Issue 11 of Unfollow from Vertigo Comics and issue 24 of Black Science from Image. So I'm now, what, I think 5 and a bit months behind on comics. I don't know anymore. I just pick them up and read them from the pile when I can. I also saw a bunch of films this past weekend. I went to a cult cinema double feature, which consisted of RoboCop and Flash Gordon.
Oh.
Now, that was a fun double. And my lovely partner, Kylie, she had not seen either of them before.
Oh, what a treat.
So I was, and, you know, it got to the point where someone, me, may have set along with the film at the exact same time. Gordon's alive! And she kind of leaned over and said, how many times have you seen this? And I said, I don't know. So that was fun. And then we also saw Guardians of the Galaxy on the weekend as well.
Volume 2.
Yes. It was good fun. I didn't mind it. It was enjoyable. The story was a little bit meh, but everything else kind of made up for that.
Yeah. I'm going to horrify people, but I think I enjoyed Fate of the Furious more than Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it had some things I liked, but, you know, I felt a lot of the characters were just marking time in that film, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, whatever.
So, but have you seen the rest of the series?
The Furious films?
Yes.
I think I've seen 1 and 2 and wasn't really that into them because they're all car-ish. And as soon as, like, 5 rocked around and then it started to be cars versus trains and trucks and tanks, and they just got stupider and stupider. And I quite enjoyed that when they became like an action franchise instead of a car franchise.
Right.
So, but they're so dumb, but they're magnificent. They're Yeah. They're like, they remind me of what I used to get out of James Bond films when I was 8.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
But they're not pathetic now, the way James Bond films are when I look at them back from the day. Anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that sounds like we both had decent weeks. But how about we go and have a look at what's going down on Durrington Way?
Sure. Okay, it's been a big week on Durrington Way. Now, I think I'll start with the biggest news.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Durrington has had a haircut.
Right.
His flowing locks have been cut back. He's looking very smart. He's looking younger. Anyway, and they seem to have, they had a 3-day Doom Patrol and YA retreat, young animal retreat with all the crew. So they went off and talked about what they're doing. And Nick Durrington said, the news story is going to melt some brains.
Right.
I hope it's not my brain. I need it. So looking forward to that. But the other thing is Nick Durrington, I fully expect this man to invent a new type of submarine or an aircraft at some point, because he seems to have lots of time on his hands and lots of creativity. Like, have you seen the Fug he's been sculpting?
I have seen that, yes.
So he's done a 3-dimensional sculpture of Fug in vivid colours. And it's very impressive. And, you know, I think you can add this to his Cliff Steele sculpture that he did.
But yes.
What will the man do next? He's the Michelangelo of comics.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's what's been going down in Durrington Way. And, one other thing. Arbud, he sent us some pics of the mixtape comic.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that came with the LP for... What do the kids call them? LPs?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
For Cave Carson, with the Cave Carson song on. And, very good. So this is basically a robot man version of Gerard Way talking about what young animal is and the advantages of telling stories in comics and how your imagination can do anything. And that was very cool, wasn't it?
Mm, yeah, it was. Thanks for that, Arbor. Yeah.
Yeah, we're really appreciative of that.
Mm.
And that's it, I think, for Durrington Way this week.
Okay. Fair enough.
You seem disbelieving.
No, it's... Well, look, we have had a lot of news from them over the last few months. So, you know, it's nice to have a breather occasionally.
Oh, but we should mention there are other little bits of Doom Patrol news. So people text us. There was an image in Justice League America, is that what it's called? The Steve Orlando book.
Oh, yes.
Alternate team. And that had a panel where the superhero, the Ray, was talking to a reporter. And she says she's from Sees All, Tells All News out of Philadelphia. And he said, isn't that out of business? And she said, it was, but Thea Jost bought it last year.
Ooh.
And that means Thea Jost is alive and well in the current DC universe.
Nice.
Post-rebirth. So Thea Jost, for those of you going, who the hell's Thea Jost? He's like the millionaire backer of Doom Patrol Volume 3. He's mm-hmm. like the Maxwell Lord of that version of the team.
Yes.
The Maxwell Lord before he was a murdering person. Yeah, when he was just a businessman.
Yes.
Who used his powers to put teams together, that guy.
Hmm.
So that's exciting. And also in Warren Ellis's The Wildstorm, there was a TV show that has said coming up next, Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
On the Galaxy Network. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Some nice shout outs there. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you to everyone who told us about those. You're very cool people.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, so it looks like we need to talk about John Byrne comics again.
Do we?
Yes, I have an update, another update.
Oh, good. Let's do some burn for you.
A burn for you. What am I gonna do? I burn for you. Burn for you.
So some people have contacted me and said, having trouble finding them, but looking. So super appreciate that. But we did hear from Darren Sutherland, who's found three issues for me. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, despite everything he said on Talking Doom about his contempt for this endeavor. Yeah. So, oh, well, good on you, Darren. Salute. Respect. Yes,
thanks, Darren. Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so a Doom Patrol postcard will be winging its way to Darren as soon as they're printed.
Cool.
Which isn't too far off. I'm just promising that.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that ticking on here?
Sure is. Guess what?
What?
It's a Doom Clock.
Oh.
Oh. Killed surprise, as the French say.
Oh.
I don't know if they really say that. Apologies to anyone in France listening to this right now.
Dean Jones is in France. Did you know that?
Is he? No, I did not know that.
Yeah, I was amazed. He's in France. He sounds like just an Aussie bloke. He's in France.
Okay. Hmm. Right.
It's probably not even Aussie.
Maybe not. Who knows?
Yeah.
Okay, so looking at the face of the Mighty Doom Clock, the last issue of a Doom Patrol book we had was only 1 week ago. Issue 6 of Volume 6, which we covered in Episode 92, where we saw the Patrol reunited, for the most part, as they're going to be in this run, I think. I think they're only really missing the Chief.
Yeah, yeah. But he's in their hearts or in their heads or something.
Yeah, he's there somewhere.
He's nearby.
Yeah.
He's close.
He's somewhere.
At this stage.
At this stage. And at this stage, issue 7 of volume 6 is due out July 26th, so 12 weeks away.
Oh, it's not too long.
No. Yeah. It's been worse.
Yeah. It has been worse.
And this week in Doom Patrol history, going on sale for $2.99 American on May 5th of 2010, with the cover date of July of that year, was Doom Patrol number 10 from Volume 5 by Keith Giffen and Matthew Clark. This issue was titled All the King's Men and had the team confront a brand new villain, the Porcelain Assassin, as she attacked them on Oolong Island, whilst elsewhere we were shown the beginnings of a new team of villains as they were being brought together, featuring the return appearances of some foes from previous runs, like Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man. And the toy. And speaking of Theodjost, Theodjost.
Wow.
So yeah, it was pretty cool on that one. Yeah, but we haven't covered any of that run yet, but we'll get there eventually. Well, you know, we'll get all good things come to those.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get there.
And that.
Yeah. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I am still kind of a bad geek. Not a fan of anime, never seen any of the Harry Potter films, much less read the books. I ventured a little further into the worlds of Star Wars and Star Trek, and I've even managed to watch a little Doctor Who. I've also managed to not watch a single episode of The Walking Dead. So what do I like?
Comic books.
I have been reading and collecting comic books since 1987, and I've been a fan of superheroes for as long as I can remember. Some would consider this a hobby, but I prefer to look at it as what it truly is, a crippling addiction that I may never recover from. Back in 2007, I started a podcast called Views from the Long Box to deal with this borderline personality disorder. Every week or so, I pick a particular comic or issue or character or whatever to talk about them, and then... well, I talk about them. It's kind of what a podcast is. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I'm joined by my semi-regular co-host, the Irredeemable Shag, or Thomas DJ, and the permanent semi-regular co-host, Andrew Leyland, and sometimes another friend from the podcasting and comic book world stops by to chat. The show is located at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, where you can find old episodes and show notes, and links to my other internet endeavors. You can also find the show on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter under the handle @BaileysPodcasts. Views from the Long Box, a podcast about comic books or a desperate cry for help. You decide. Every Tuesday, or so, at viewsfromthelongbox.com.
And now it's time for Doomsplaining, and this week we are looking at issues 66 and 67 from Volume 2 of the Doom Patrol. So I'll be taking you through 66 first. It was cover dated May of 1993, went on sale April 6th that year for a mere $1.95, with 32 pages, edited by Tom Robert Payer, written by Rachel Pollack, pencils by Richard Case, inks by Stan Wach, letters by Johnny Workman Jr. Oh, yeah. And colors by Daniel Vozzo.
The Voz.
The Voz. He's like the Fonzie, but of colors or something. Anyway, yes, this issue is titled The Pig It Was That Lived, or Part 3 of Sliding in the Wreckage. Even the title doesn't get off to a good start. So. And previously in this run of the Doom Patrol, which we covered back in episode 88 from March 2017, for those listening in the future, we saw Dorothy the Ape-Faced Girl trying to cope with the team falling apart, Dr. Will Magnus trying to cheer her up about it. We also saw weird beings appearing out of nowhere, some of which had teeth for nipples, and the return of Cliff Steele, who was losing his mind, similar to Niles Calder losing his head, literally. All this plus the Book of Ice causing chaos around the world, the US government deciding to get involved in their own unique way, and a giant decomposing pig falling out of the sky and landing in the center of a city. Neato!
The usual.
Just the usual. Yeah. It's Wednesday, you know. and Grant Morrison had left the book, and the new writer Rachel Pollack had joined the creative team at this stage. So... Issue 66 opens with a desert plain with mysterious tribesmen standing near a giant decomposing pig, writing strange words in a mound of dirt. They mention the rubbing of letters, letters of dirt and stars, hungry for words, numbers, talking, dreaming, and maps. Right. But back in our world, Cliff is fighting the strange beings that appeared at the end of issue 65, all the while reliving memories of past adventures in his head. Magnus tries to drag Dorothy away with him to safety, but she yells, "I'm not just a kid, I'm not helpless," and decides to help Cliff by calling on some of her imaginary friends. So she calls up Jolly Hanger, who's a man-sized being composed completely of wire clothes hangers, and the Vegans, who imagine female satyrs dressed like Vegas showgirls, with the exception of the tribal African masks on their faces.
Yeah. Mm.
And so Dorothy and her friends...
Succinctly described there, Mike. Well done.
Thank you. It took a while to get there.
Yeah.
So Dorothy and her friends, they turn the tide and drive away the bizarre attackers. However, Dorothy has to then spend a few minutes calming Cliff down, who doesn't realize at first that the fight is actually over. Magnus then steps up and tells the other two that they need to get to a safer spot and reactivate the building's defense systems. As they head down a hallway, Cliff leaps into attack mode as he thinks they're being ambushed by beings appearing out of nowhere. But Magnus yells at him that there's no one actually there. Clearly, things are not right in Cliff's head. Meanwhile, over in the city centre, the chaos grows as regular people are drawn to the giant decomposing pig, only to be transformed into bizarre beings themselves. Attackers dressed in African garb leap out of the glowing innards of the giant pig. I'm assuming there's a portal or something there, sending these people running for their life. Police squads...
A porkle.
Oh, God, a porkle. Well played, sir. Well played. Anyway, police squads arrive at the scene, and one officer radios in for assistance. We're going to need some help. We better go right to the top. We're going to need the White House on this one. Shit, maybe even the Pentagon. And speaking of the Pentagon, we then cut away to the general we saw in issue 65, who believed the Doom Patrol were the cause of the recent weirdness and sent the bizarre worker beings to attack them. He's now on the phone to someone, confirming that the world is being invaded due to a Tiresias outbreak. Prophecies, sex changing, snakes, crystal balls, even nanos changing civilians into monsters. The good news is, he has for the person at the end of the line, is that he's located the nexus of this outbreak, and he believes it's stemming from the patrol. And yes, he sent his constructors, the weird beings, to end it all shortly. Back at DPHQ, Magnus is trying to figure out how to activate the defense systems, while Dorothy watches over a rambling Cliff. Suddenly, a wall explodes and the constructors burst through, continuing their attack. Magnus manages to mash some buttons on the control console in time for giant spikes to rise from the floor, separating the two groups. As our heroes decide to fall back, Dorothy protects their escape by calling back the vegans, along with Pretty Miss Dot, to fight the constructors. Meanwhile, back in the city center, the constructors have also arrived at the giant decomposing pig, just as civilians undergo more bizarre changes due to the nanos landing on their skin. The constructors warn that all this chaos is a violation of code, but the change people don't care, and they're adamant that they want to return home through the glowing porkle in the pig. God, that's awful. Elsewhere, in another dimension, the giant mountain that is Niles Calder's consciousness is talking with the desert people. They want Niles to go home, but he refuses, even if it means the nanos leaving his world in return. Plus, there's a matter of heads not being able to exist without bodies. One of the desert people says to him, "All parts extended, broken made whole," and the nanos begin to work on Niles' face. Back in our world, at DPHQ, things get crazier as the constructors have Magnus, Cliff, and Dorothy trapped, and she's running out of options to protect them. And suddenly the African beings appear and begin fighting the constructors themselves. In a brief interlude, one of these African beings offers Dorothy a gift. A brain. A fresh brain. Excited, she runs off to the lab where the chief's head is being stored in cold storage and retrieves it, well, it slash him. And Niles' head speaks. "Ah, where am I?" "The real world," Dorothy answers. And she puts Niles and the brain on a trolley, leading them back towards the fighting. With a spoken command, the chief activates the room's containment systems, isolating the remaining constructors, before saying that they need to insert the brain into Cliff immediately. And they do so just in time, so that a restored Cliff can save Magnus from death at the hands of the constructors in yet another room. Another spoken command from Niles, and the constructors are tricked by holograms into believing that their mission is completed. Niles asks Cliff to take him to the communications room because it's time to call the White House. And the story ends with the changed civilians back in the city leaping through the portal in the giant pig and being welcomed back to the Mother Time by the African people in the other dimension. And in the patrol headquarters, we see Cliff and the head of Niles on a tray of ice arguing before Dorothy convinces them they need each other and they have to work together again.
Oh.
And what did you think of that issue, Paul?
What is it? it's an opening arc, and I think, I don't know, there's a lot going in here that I don't understand why. I don't understand the visuals, I don't get why there's so much African imagery connected to the nanos, the nanobots or whatever.
Well, Dorothy did mention, and I think the first part of this storyline, that she read a book about Africa, I'm certain of it, and a lot of that sort of got into her head when she was younger. So somehow I think the Book of Ice is feeding off that.
Okay, so it manifests based on her imagination.
Let's say yes.
Okay, good, good. There seems to be a redemptive element worked in for the chief because he's previously in Doom Patrol, he's a murdering bastard.
yes.
Yeah, and here he's like, "No, I deserve to be dead. I deserve to be dead." And then it's like, "No, the nanos say you have to come back, or you know, or you have to save the Doom Patrol." So he is brought back as a disembodied head. And he needs to do that to come back and say sorry. And Cliff is pretty quick to listen to Dorothy and get over it. So, which is and also, I mean, we call him Robot Man, but he's Robot for actually most of this story.
Oh yeah,
he has no man element left. He's just got a memory of a man's brain at one, for most of the story. So that's the other thing that he gets from this is, the Candlemaker stomped on his brain in the previous conclusion of Grant Morrison's run, and here he gets a real brain back, made by the nanos, delivered by a guy in like a puma mask. Carrying it in a little scale, which is kind of interesting. It's setting up a new status quo for the team, I guess you could say. The Robot Man's back. He's not a robot. He's a robot man. So back to being a man with a robot brain.
Yes.
And Niles is back from the dead and seems to be completely functional as a head sitting in a tray of ice. But, yeah, a very small team at this point, just Dorothy and Cliff and Niles.
Yes.
Yeah.
They've really been whittled down, yes.
That's the smallest hole patrol we've ever seen.
Yeah, true. True. Yeah, it's a bit of an odd one, and it's the last part of this sliding in the wreckage story, and it's not entirely satisfying. There's kind of callbacks to, you know, the Pentagon and the government being involved, and it doesn't go anywhere.
Mm.
Other than the fact that the beings that the general sends to them, we've learned that they're called constructors.
Mm.
Okay. They're going to, you know, I guess reconstruct normalcy and reality and that, but that never happens. It kind of just, yeah, it's setting up for what Pollack really wants to do with her own stuff. And kind of bridging Morrison's stuff and hers, but yeah, it's not entirely satisfying or successful, I don't think.
Mm. One thing I did think was interesting is when the Porkle appears, you do have some individuals who yearn to be changed by it.
Like, yeah,
they don't want to be normal. They want to be, you know, different and modified and, you know, leave their normal lives and their normal bodies and normal physical behavior and everything. So yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did like the policeman who ends up with like four mouths on his, going down his chin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was okay, but not one of the better issues or better storylines. I have to admit it's, unfortunately, a lot of this is like these three issues that Pollack sets up to move between her and Morrison. Yeah, a lot of it is just weirdness for weirdness' sake, because it's never really referenced ever again, any of this ever really happening.
Yeah.
And as we're about to see in the next issue, it's pretty much all forgotten about.
Yeah, you know what I do like about this comic, though?
What's that?
The art.
Yeah, the art's really good.
Yeah, this is Richard Case's last Doom Patrol issue.
True.
Yeah, and I think the stuff in the sort of dream world with the Chief is just magnificent. They're really beautiful pages. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, having the Chief being like a part of a rock mountain and all that. So, yeah, but I did enjoy that. And they let Richard Case do the cover as well, which is also a rarity at this point. So,
yes.
So it looks like Cliff Steele's been turned into some sort of art project.
Or candy dispensing machine, almost.
Yeah, well, he's got a button eye and he's got sort of twine around his fingers, which...
Mm.
And yeah. So, but it's really nice that Richard Case got to do the cover for his final issue.
Yeah, yeah, that was cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess the one thing I do like about this as well, as bizarre as it is the way we got there, is that I've always kind of liked the idea of the Chief being the head of the Doom Patrol, and he literally becomes the head of the Doom Patrol from this issue on. And
yeah,
that's it's so morbid and silly. It's kind of always appealed to me.
Yeah, well, yeah. Going from a man who, you know, needs a wheelchair to get around to being a head in a tray.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes.
Shall we move on to the next one?
Please.
So, speaking of Heads in a Tray, this has a cover, so 67, which came out, according to the cover, June 1993, but it actually came out the 4th of May. Oh, 4th of May, that's a Star Wars day, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, 1993, so that's, that's like this time, 24 years ago or something.
Yeah, isn't that freaky?
Whoa.
Go us.
Mind blowing.
Yeah.
Anyway, $1.95, written by Rachel Pollack, penciled by new penciler Linda Medley, with inks by Graham Higgins, the letterer Johnny Workman Jr., he's back, and coloured by The Voz, and edited by Tom Robert Payer, or Payer, as I hear some people say. I don't know. I like Payer.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway. And it has a bitchin' Tom Taggart cover.
Oh, I love this cover.
Yeah, so it's one of his little sculpture jobbies, and it actually has a crate full of ice with a model of the chief's head lying in it, with a little note stabbed into the side of the tray saying, "Cliff, don't forget to feed head," from Dorothy. And there's Uncle Elvis's homemade chocolate milkshake next to it. So, yeah. Is that a shout out to Uncle Elvis, the letter hack of note?
Maybe.
It's the only Uncle Elvis I know. Okay. Anyway, yeah. But the chief looks very seedy and unwell in this picture.
He does.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get into the issue. And this is, I mean, you could sort of treat this as a new number one for the Doom Patrol as far as what the story does, because the previous arc reset the continuity, and this one sort of, you know, is a break point with a new beginning. So,
yes.
Anyway, so what's inside? A family wagon with a trailer hitched behind rolls through the countryside, but the family inside is anything but typical. Robot Man Cliff Steele drives, Dorothy the Ape-Faced Girl is in the back, and the severed head of the chief, perched atop a cat littered full of ice, has shotgun. And the Doom Patrol are moving, and Cliff isn't happy about it. It's all the way in the woods. How are we supposed to operate so far from everything? I'm doing that voice because Cliff is really whiny in this comic.
He is, actually, yes.
Chief impatiently explains again, the house has special properties. It was built on a native power site. Not only is the house bigger on the inside, he explains, but the team will be able to teleport from the den. And as they drive, weird spectral images swirl around and a moaning, groaning noise gradually rises. As they pull into the driveway of Rainbow Estates, a community for living, a mysterious bandaged hand pulls back the curtains and observes their arrival. As they head inside, the chief explains the community was never established with the recession hitting, so there's only the one house. And Dorothy heads straight to the back of the house and sees play equipment. So she, against the swings, a punch, like as in punch and Julie style doll rests. And it turns to Dorothy and asks if she would like to play. She's delighted and asks the doll its name. And he says, Child. And Dorothy tells Child that she'll call him Charlie because her name sucks. So I guess she's saying... And that she likes him. But another bandaged shadowy figure watches from nearby trees. Inside, grumpy Cliff doesn't want to give the chief a milkshake because it runs straight out of his neck and messes up the ice in the litter box. He stomps off to unload the boxes in the trailer and finds them all piled up in the driveway with loose bandages trailing in amongst them. And then we cut to another shadowy figure. So shadowy figures abounding in this one. He's perched on a hilltop above a valley, and we hear some thoughts or someone's thoughts, and perhaps their desires. And they say, crouch and whisper, little faces growl and bite. Anyway, Cliff carries the loose bandages inside and says, someone loaded all the stuff from the car. Who do you? Ah, oh, shit. Dorothy, clutching Charlie in one hand, is feeding a milkshake to the chief, and the tray is overflowing with the chocolatey. And he snatches the shake away from Dorothy and asks, what's the matter with you? And Dorothy starts to cry and says, there's nothing the matter with me. And Cliff quickly apologizes. He changes the subject by asking about the doll, and Dorothy introduces him to the lifeless toy. Cliff holds him and sees a sudden flash of twin boys tormenting another boy, and he flings the doll away. Flustered, Cliff heads up to his room, and as he walks up the stairway, bandaged hands reach through the wall behind him on the stairs, and he goes into his room, and in his room is a naked red-haired woman, a look of rapture on her face, dangling from the ceiling from ropes made of flowers, and she's surrounded by handheld hairdryers, which are also dangling by their power cords from the ceiling, and the woman has these little post-it notes, pictures of animals stuck here and there on her body. Dun, dun, dun. Cliff rushes to grab her to help her down, but he passes right through her, smacking into the wall as she fades. What's going on here? He pops open his skull case and checks the diagnostics on his brain. All good there. As Dorothy picks her own bedroom, one with butterflies in the bedding, Cliff moves to his own bed to see it covered in dead fish, with a burning hand reaching up out of the bedspread. Not again. Colder! Colder! He summons Niles. Elsewhere, a little girl is sleeping and a raven comes through her open window and speaks weird poetry about laughing, joining the pack, and the girl rises, removes her nightshirt. Wrists and ankles, cool as light, come join the party, crouch and bite. The girl heads out the window, snarling on all fours like a wild animal. She puts on some animal skins as her mother realizes that the girl is gone. She's run off to join them, the mother says in horror. The girl, Linda, is soon in a circle with lots of other feral-looking girls, all dressed in skins before their summoner, some leather-clad person.
Mm.
Ooh. The next morning, Cliff and the chief are discussing what Cliff did or did not see. Chief suggests they consult their computer. A ghostly figure in thigh suspenders and fishnets passes through the ceiling unseen above them. As Niles operates the voice-activated computer, Cliff heads down to the den to check out the room, almost tripping on loose bandages on the stairs. He sees something shimmering above a train set on the table in the room. And, oh, yes, come back. Oh, do it again, he hears. As Cliff leans closer to watch the light show on the table, bandages like tentacles reach out towards his back. And there are two bandaged people behind Cliff, and a male pulls Cliff back from the light. We know it's a male because he's dressed in male clothes under the over the bandages.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a female one who's like in a nighty. And she sends out bandages to encase the light energy on the train set to make a human shape, squatting in the middle. Okay, Rosie, honey, that's enough for today. You can play with your train set some other time, says the bandaged woman. Cliff attempts to get some answers at this point from the bandage couple, but their explanations only confuse him further. They are interrupted by the chief being carried in by Dorothy. They are autoerotic fatalities, he pronounces. Cliff says, you don't mean they're dead? And chief says, I'm afraid I do. Autoerotic fatalities is the legal term for people who die in sexual accidents of their own devising. And Cliff says, like ghosts? And the chief suggests the term sexually remaindered spirits, or SRSs for short. Cliff is still struggling with this idea. So they're trapped? And the bandaged female replies, of course not. They like it here. This is their home. And apparently lots of them died in this home because this was where people used to go for autoerotic fantasies. And Dorothy, sitting on the floor with Charlie, has the final word. I think it's sweet. They died for love. Okay. Anyway, the chief interrupts, suggesting Cliff needs to do some grocery shopping. And Cliff is still reeling from the revelations as he starts shopping for groceries. And his complaints are interrupted by a shop invasion. It's the Wild Girls, someone shrieks, as fur-clad kids run amok in the aisles. Cliff is running aloud, wondering aloud how he is supposed to fight little kids as they push him into a cherry display and smoosh cherries into his face. Suddenly, the three wild children are subdued by bandages as the couple from the house appear. Charlie the doll strolls confidently into the supermarket and kisses each of the captive children on the cheek, immediately calming them. Now, Cliff is asking about the doll, and now he can see it can walk. And the bandaged couple tell Cliff that Charlie is called the inner child and he was created by the SRS to help them. The store manager appears and thanks the bandaged duo. So obviously they get out and about. And he identifies them as George and Marion, which is very helpful and a bit late in the book. Back at the house, Cliff is demanding more explanations from Niles, eventually forcing the chief to confess that he knew all about the kinky weirdness before they arrived. Chief sheepishly admits that he knew and that the SRS energy was what was needed to power his teleporter. Outside the window, a raven streaks away into the night. As the Doom Patrol settle in for their second night, we see the leather-clad figure in the woods. Growl and bite, little cubs. Crouch and whisper. Our dark will come. And this leather-clad person has boobs and a leather jacket and a sort of bird face.
Yes.
The end.
Well done.
So this is different.
A little bit. What did you think of that one, Paul?
It's got some interesting elements. I like that the Doom Patrol have resettled and completely moved venues and set up a new base of operations, which seems to be, what's it called?
Rainbow Estates.
Rainbow Estates, a community for living, except it's only one house. That's interesting, and I really like the art in this one because we've got Linda Medley doing a very different sort of style. So everyone's kind of a bit rounded faced and puffy, and
the lines are a little more fluid than Richard Case's.
And I think the SRS stuff is kind of fun and but weird. I have two things about this is. Cliff acts like Jerry Seinfeld throughout this issue. What's going on now? You know, he's doing that all the time. And he, it doesn't seem like the Cliff who is, you know, he's been down the weirdness path before, you know. He wouldn't be freaking out about what's happening and, you know, Cliff is, you know, he is a an everyman sort of character, but he's not dumb.
No.
Yeah, but in this, he's just befuddled by it all, which is... Yeah, it's odd.
And he is a bit of a whiner in this, like, you know, oh, teleporting from the den, what the hell, you know?
Yeah. And I just want to say right now, like, Chief could build a teleporter anywhere.
True.
I don't think he would need to go to the country to find, you know, sort of sexy ghost spirits to power his teleporter. I'm sure he could work that out anywhere. I mean, the JLA at this point have teleportation. So I'm sure Chief wouldn't, you know, be left out of that, so... But I mean, Dorothy and her relationship with the doll. I mean, at first the doll looks super creepy, but it actually turns out it seems to be benign and trustworthy. So, okay, I'll go with that. And we've got this thing of the wild girls and this person in the woods who lures children away and makes them feral. So, you know, it sets a few things up and it is very interesting and it feels like a new start for the Doom Patrol,
which
the three previous issues didn't really.
No. Feel.
Yeah. What are your thoughts?
This is probably one of my all-time favorite Doom Patrol issues.
Wow.
And the reason for that is that this is one of the very first issues of the Patrol I ever bought.
Uh-huh.
See, when I got into the Patrol way back in the day... I had missed all of Morrison's stuff completely. So I think I got the... Somehow I know I definitely had 66, and I may have gone back and bought parts 1 and 2 of Sighting in the Wreckage, but I definitely had issue 67 with this brilliant Tom Taggart cover. And I think it was around the time that the Vertigo Jam one-shot came out. And I'm sure that the story was done by Rachel and Linda in that as well. And it was kind of, I can't remember the exact story. We'll have to cover it one day, but I think it was kind of like an introductory thing and, oh, aren't we wacky and different? And there's something about it that hooked me. And 67, my God, it was so different to everything else I was reading at the time.
Yeah, I could see that.
I got to learn about autoerotic asphyxiation, you know, and autoerotic deaths and... That sounds completely bizarre and messed up, but there was something fascinating about that. And yeah, it was just like, wow, that's really messy, but that's kind of cool in a way.
Well, you wouldn't have had the whiplash of, you know, seeing a bandaged character around and thinking it was Rebus.
No, not at all.
Yeah, because that's one of the weird things is like, you know, the Doom Patrol has already done bandaged people. And here's some more, but they're different.
Yeah.
Unrelated completely, which was quite weird.
And I found George and Marion charming from the get-go because to me they're almost like a perfect 50s sitcom couple.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. And you know, they're very pleasant and they dress well and they're nice to everyone. And you know, they help out the town by taking care of these feral children.
Yeah, so. And in at the end of the story, they're, you know, having a little toast because they're happy that the Doom Patrol has come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I would have been about, let me see, it came out in, when was this? May 4th, 93. So I would have been about 17 and a half at the time this came out.
Wow.
And it just blew my teenage mind.
Okay, wow.
So, yeah, it's... I know some people are not fans of Pollack's stuff. I love the start of her stuff, especially the stuff that's coming up with that big-faced woman we see at the very end, and the feral children. And there's a bit more to do with the sexually romantic spirits, but just the wildness of it and just how it was so different from, yeah, from everything I read back in, because I was really into the X-Men back at this era.
So this is very similar.
Not at all. I mean, I was, if there was a book, with from Marvel that had an X in the title, I was pretty much buying it regardless. I was a massive X-Men fan. And then I started hearing, you know, reviews and media stuff about, you know, this Doom Patrol book and Vertigo and, you know, this, that, and the other. I was like, oh, you know, I might check it out. They're a superhero team. Then you read and you go, they're a superhero team? So, it's very
not
different.
Not like all the others.
No, not at all. So this issue 67 will always have a special place in my heart amongst all the Doom Patrol stuff. So, Just the fact that it got so saucy and naughty with all the sex stuff in it.
There's some weird sexy deaths being recreated here. I don't get how the train set one works.
Hey, look, everyone's got their own kinks and interests. I kind of had a... I felt bad for laughing in the scene where Dorothy goes up and picks her room and she finds the room with the butterfly quilts on there, and she also notices nipple clamps on the bed. And she's holding them up and go, what are these? How do you play with these? And I was just like, oh, God, that's so wrong. There's like a very, very naughty undercurrent in this book, and it's all sexy and dirty and incredibly wrong, yet I find that incredibly interesting as well, that someone's, you know, gone and mined that rock for that thing which I hadn't seen in comics before.
Well, what's the sexy death with the pile of fish and the burning hand?
I have no idea.
That is out of hand.
See, back when this came out, there wasn't so much a great deal of the internet around. So it's not like I could have gone and typed in, you know, autoerotic deaths, you know, and seen what the hell Google would have terrified me with.
Yeah.
I'm still, to this day, I'm still trying to figure out what the title of the issue, Heroes in the Autos, actually is meant to mean.
I wonder if it was trying to say heroes with the Eros, but I don't get in the autos.
Autoerotic fixation. I'm sure that's what it ties into there. But
okay, so Heroes in the Autos.
But maybe, yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. If anyone out there knows and it's appropriate to tell us, please do.
Please do, yes. Yeah, I really like this issue. It is like it's a brand new beginning for them, and it's just really different.
Yeah.
And just a little bit naughty.
It is. It looks like a... when the invasion of the shop happens, it looks like a shopping trolley full of poo gets pushed through the door.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what that is, but let's say that's what it is.
Well, that's probably the worst case scenario, but I can't think of anything else it looks like.
Unless it's just like dirt and rocks or something, but
yeah.
Yeah. Let's hope that's what it is.
Yeah, and I need to point out that as the chief is sitting in the kitchen at night, there's two mini people dressed as frogs, naked, fighting with feather dusters on little pigs. So that's different too. Hey,
that's a little bit different. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I remember when we had Chris Sabella on the show once, and he said, you know, basically anything from 67 onwards did not exist for him.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, I love this weird, kinky shit that it gets into at the start of Pollack's run.
Yeah.
So, you know, each of their own, man, you know?
Yeah. Well, I should just say I have never read these, so I'm reading these as we go through. So I've not leapt ahead, and I don't know what's coming, and I'm going to keep it that way because I want to come at these with fresh eyes. And, yeah.
I dare say there will be a few listeners out there in a similar boat as you, Paul, because Pollack's run isn't one of the most well-regarded ones, to be honest.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's all on Comixology if anyone wants to go check it out. That's an easy way to find it. It's never been collected. you'd have to find back issues or Comixology. So you can get your digital copies of it. So yeah. But this is a good one to sample, and it feels like a new issue, a new story, and a new take on the team.
And yeah, it completely ignores the three preceding issues.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, we've had some weird stuff, but we're, you know, an eight-faced girl, a man who is a robot, and a head in a kitty litter full of ice, and we're moving out to the country.
Yeah.
It's like, what? Oh, dear.
For new sexy adventures.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I shouldn't get so excited because... But I just really like this issue. I like the change in the art even. That as much as I love Richard Case's work, his is very angular and lots of straight lines. This is a lot more fluid. And I think Linda Medley does a great job on this.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. It's very good.
Yeah.
Mm. So, I mean, I think my issues are more around the characterization than anything else to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but the Chief does seem a lot more... he's a bit meeker than he was before this. So
yes,
like he's more trying to appease Cliff, and you know he's not straight out saying I did this because you know he's trying to be sneaky about doing what he wants rather.
There's still that bit of sneakiness in him because he confesses that he knew all about the house before they moved in.
Yeah,
and he didn't bother to tell you know Cliff.
Yeah,
so you know. And Cliff's going all Seinfeld on these sexy ghosts.
Yeah.
What's the deal with autoerotic asphyxiation?
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so it's... this comic blew my mind way back when. I still really love it today. It's one of my favourites.
Mm. Yeah. Good. Alrighty. Doomsplained?
Oh, yeah. Need to lie down.
And now it's time for the Mailbag of Doom, where we look at the question of the week answers. And the last question of the week was, which comic book character would you like to have a ride-along with? And so I did specify on Twitter that a ride-along is just hanging out with for the day. They don't have to have their own transport as such.
Right.
So we heard from Fractures at Fracknarok, or Fracknarok he's calling himself, and he said, there is no way in hell I can stick to one answer for this week's question of the week. No way, no how.
And then Cameron Williams at Wasgo said, it's Batman. And he referred to an earlier tweet he sent out a while back saying, his only real concern is that as a vehicle, Batman has a terrible safety record. And there was Batman holding, you know, very badly injured Robins and an injured Joker.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think maybe... The meaning of the question got a bit mixed up there.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We heard from our friend Ryan Daly at RyanDaly01 on Twitter, and he said, Oracle, and I immediately pictured him sitting in the wheelchair with Oracle.
Oh, dear.
Getting a ride along. Oh, but he clarified that when someone said, was it Babs or the new Oracle? And he said, who? Whatever. I don't care. The whole idea is to sit around watching TV.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. I guess that's my Ryan's priorities.
Yeah. Yes. We then heard from Karthik at Karthik Akarala, who said, normally he answers with Dread, but he said, not Dread, I wouldn't survive that. So Ghost Rider, Robbie Reyes.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
I think people are taking the ride along quite literally.
Mm, yes. Yeah.
Hmm.
Mm. Jay Bandoy at W Bandoy said Star-Lord, and he said the Milano is a rad ship. Can you imagine all the fun death-defying adventures while rocking out to great classic music?
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I've got to admit.
Yeah.
Yeah. We then heard from D, who is at Dinosaur Number One on Twitter, and they said NFL Super Pro. Why, yes, I am watching the NFL draft. Why do you ask? Okay.
Okay. We heard from Jared Driscoll on Facebook, and he said, whoever is Richie Rich's limo driver, you know that Richie Rich would have some fat rides.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Dr. Ange on the Twitter said, somebody from the pulp era, because I want to be in a film I want to be in a film noir. Femme Fatale's hot lead, no, hot lead probably means, and cold drinks. So I guess The Shadow. And he provided us lots of art of The Shadow comics.
That would be, that'd be a bit bloody hanging out with The Shadow.
Maybe, like, yeah.
He just, dude just caps a lot of people. That's what he mostly does. Martin Gray, and he said, who else but the Legion of Superheroes traversing the centuries in a time travel cabinet bubble? And he put in a panel where Superman is calling the time bubble a time cabinet.
Right.
Interesting.
Mm. Saul Bishop, at Saul Bishop on Twitter, said, Blue Beetle, Ted Kord. I'm pretty sure he'd bring snacks.
I'm sure he would. We heard from Astrakis One, and he's called Leave It Mew Tech Rink this time on Twitter, and he said, any DC character as long as we go in these, and he put in a picture of the Justice Jogger, which is a superpowers toy, which I've never seen before, but looks like the dumbest thing ever. It's a seat with walking legs.
Yes.
And Superman is getting around in it, because that's probably the most efficient way for Superman to get around, isn't it?
I love those DC superpowers toys from the 80s. I love the majority of the vehicles they came out with for the figures. I do not love the Justice Jogger. And Kevin, I'm a little bit disappointed that you suggested that. Because it's so ridiculous. Why would Superman need a Justice Jogger? I need to go and save the city. I'm just going to lay back and keep it cool whilst the Justice Jogger gets me there.
Very slowly.
Interesting choice, Kevin. Thank you.
that wins answer of the week, I think. The no dumbness.
We then heard from Chris, who is at BTO and Bat Books from the Batgirl the Oracle podcast.
Yeah, he contributes to that show, yeah.
Yes. And Chris said, the Jack Knight Starman. Okay. And then he said, the least wanted would be Dr. Doom or Matter Eater Lad.
Yeah, hanging out with Jack Knight would be fun. Yeah. Hanging out with Dr. Doom would be terrifying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just a bit.
Nikki, who's at anti_laser on Twitter, said, the Silver Surfer. Oh, that would be rad.
That'd be cool. Yeah. And another literal ride along. So
yeah.
Jeffrey Brown at Tosigo said, Dan Turpin and Dr. Wells.
Dan Turpin from the Metropolis Special Crimes Unit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. And Dr. Wells from The Flash?
That's who I'm assuming, because I think he used those two names in a previous answer as well.
Did he? So
I think Jeffrey's a big fan of those.
Oh, okay, cool.
Either that or I've read this answer previously in the week. I don't know.
Well, it's an answer for all situations.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, what do you want for lunch? Dan Turpin and Dr. Wells.
Where were you on the night of the 15th?
Dan Turpin
and Dr. Wells.
How many roads must a man walk down?
Dan Turpin and Dr. Wells.
Yeah, no, it doesn't quite work. Anyway,
okay.
We heard from Clinton Robson at Coffee and Comics, from Coffee and Comics blog on the Twitter, and he said, Alfred, that dude takes you anywhere you want to go.
True.
Yeah. Literally drives you around.
Yeah. Rift at Rift1821 said, the Silver Surfer, totally rad. Norrin rad. Wordplay.
Yeah, very clever. We heard from Chloe, who's at Fiat Vamp. And she said, Poison Ivy, all that leather and latex and the activity would make the super set very stinky people. And Ivy smells like a rose. Advantage, Ivy. That's one way to look at it.
That's a very good... Thank you, Chloe. I think that's the first time we've heard it from Chloe. So thanks for joining us.
Definitely.
And thanks for the great answer.
Yeah.
We also heard from the Illustrious Q, who is at the Illustrious Q. And they said, Batman.
Ah.
Yeah. Short and sweet.
Mm.
All right, Paul, who would you want to have a ride along with?
I'd like to hang out with Booster Gold and do a bit of time travel with his cool little robot Skeets. And I think Booster would mostly try and stay out of danger, so it wouldn't be too lethal for me. You know, and he'd be a fun person to hang out with.
Yeah.
You know, he'd stop for lunch.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, what about you, Mike?
I'll say Batman. I think sometimes it would be well, you're kind of doing two birds, one stone. You're helping protect Gotham, and you're also taking care of. It's a good outlet to unleash some of your aggression on naughty people.
Oh,
you know, I think a bit of exercise as well. You know, taking care of the mean streets of Gotham. You know.
So what I'm hearing is you want to punch people.
Maybe, yeah.
You did have a rough day.
Yeah, I've had a bit of a bad day. Yeah. But okay. I was thinking of Batman pretty much all along. I just think that would be an interesting way to spend a day. I don't know whether I'd survive it or whether I'd want to go back after my my first day tryout, you know. Probably fall off a zip line, you know, whilst he's miles ahead.
Oh, okay.
You never know. But yeah, I think that would be an interesting way to spend. Well, I spend a night, I guess. Yeah,
it would be interesting. Be different. Hopefully, it'd be different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't get out and fight crime in Brisbane, do you?
No, funnily enough, no, I don't.
Okay, I guess we're coming up to the end then.
Yeah. That's it for this week.
Well, what's on next week, Mike?
Next week, we are taking a break.
We're on a break.
And
it's not you. It's not you, it's us.
Yeah. And then we'll be back with more Rachel Pollack. We'll be looking at issues 68 and 69 of Volume 2.
Oh, straight through.
Straight through. Got to get some good, sexy reading in. And, Paul, do we have a question of the week for the next episode?
We do have a question of the week for next episode, and it is, who is your favourite cop in fiction?
I wonder what Karthik will say.
Favourite law enforcement person. Who can guess? And just a reminder that it is, in fact, JL May as we speak, and the first episode of JL May, the coverage that we're all doing. All these podcasts are getting together to cover a comic called Justice. And that it's starting this month. Mm-hmm. And the first episode is on the Fire and Water podcast. And that is out as we speak. And episode 2 and 3 will be coming out hot on the heels of that. And that will be on Supermates podcast, which is also on that network. And the Idle Head of Diablo podcast, which is about the Martian Manhunter. And that will have part 3. So it's underway. And we're going to do chapter 11 at the end of the month. So, yeah, that's very exciting. So this is something we do every May now, apparently, where we look at a Justice League comic, and we call it JL May.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's cool. So check it out. Check it out, everyone. But anyway.
There may even be a special guest appearance by one of us on another one of those podcast episodes.
Ooh.
I won't say any more, but you know, it'll be good. Well, I reckon it'll be good anyway.
Well, I haven't been asked, so.
Well, there you go. But you're the one that came up with the idea in the first place, so you know, you're the grand architect of it all, Paul.
Oh, well, throw some respect for Ange, because it was partly his idea as well.
Back in the day. Okay, all right. Well, now that we've been nice to him, he can't make any Australian music jokes for a week.
Yeah, he's in the sin bin.
Yep. Anyway, let's sign off. Let's get out of here. As always, you can reach us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We've got the Waiting for Doom Facebook page, and you can always check out Doug's blog posts on mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com.
Blug's dog post.
I nearly said that, actually.
Yeah, I could tell. All right, I think that's it.
That's it. Let's get out of here. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll catch you in 2 weeks' time for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.
It'll be fine. We'll get there.
We'll get there. It's about 14 edits in it. It'll be fine.
Oh, that shit. One take wonder tonight.
All right.
No pressure.
Okie dokie.
All righty. Let us do this, sir. Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast about the world's greatest, strangest superhero team, the mighty Doom Patrol.
Hello, I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at Reading Thunder or his and blah. laughed at in New South Wales and Queensland. You still want to do it in one take?
You shatterer of dreams, you.
I'm sorry.
Try that one again, Paul.
Okay. Do you want to go again? And
no, I'm happy with what I did.
You prick. All right.